Welcome to Leaders Under Fire in Sports, brought to you by Culture in Sports. This is where leadership decisions, organizational culture, media pressure, and legal realities collide. Your hosts are legal expert Bob Boland, myself, crisis communication specialist Jeff Chatterton, and with leadership and culture expert Dr. Jeremy Piasecki. Together with our special guests, we break down the moments that put sports leaders under the microscope and what it really takes to respond with integrity, accountability, and impact. This is Leaders Under Fire in Sports. Welcome to Leaders Under Fire in Sports, where we go and peel the curtain back behind the scenes and look at all the decisions that get made. Some are great, some are not so great. We are joined, as always, by the good Dr. Bob Boland and the ever even better Dr. Jeremy Piasecki. Bob, you said something really interesting as we were getting onto the call. You said there's, I want to talk about that just for a minute. The whole nature of the coaching relationship. It used to be that you could do whatever you wanted as long as you won, right? I mean, Bobby Knight was throwing chairs onto the floor. He was acting like an absolute jerk. You know, there's legendary stories that are out there of, you know, coaches behaving badly. You can't get away with that anymore. And you said something that I want to delve into a little bit more. You said there's only two types of coaches anymore: those who have been investigated or those who will be. What do you mean by that?
That's a paraphrase of Lou Holtz, who said there are only two kinds of coaches: them that's been fired and them that's gonna be. In this way, I think in the modern world, coaches, and we can extrapolate that out. We can talk about CEOs. We can talk about anybody in leadership is going to end up having their approach questioned under some official challenge, whether that's an investigation, whether that's a review, whether that's a lawsuit. We're all living lives that are under examination a lot of the time. And sometimes these come suddenly, sometimes they come with warning, and sometimes they come because you've known about it for years and nobody fixed it. They figure they've gotten away with it this long. But I think I see a lot of innocent people who are good and caring coaches who are getting called up and accused, sometimes falsely, sometimes partially realistically, and sometimes in an amplified way. And are under investigation, and that is a very difficult position. But I would say this, and it kind of goes back to something I once wrote about a long time ago: when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. Now, I didn't coin that phrase. That's kind of been referred to as the first rule of holes: don't make it worse, don't make it deeper. But like a zebra on Mutual Omaha's Wild Kingdom caught in a net, people tend to thrash in those moments. They lash out. And in almost every case, like we've talked about, they make it worse, or in many cases, they make it worse. Jeff, we know a lot of your business is about how you make it better. And so the topic for today, fresh in my mind, fresh from what I'm doing in my regular life, is how do you hold it together and not make it worse? How do you go through a difficult period in your life, a difficult period of questioning, and not make it worse? And I think the one thing I've learned from the years I've put in this space, there are some clear things that you can do and not do to make it better, and certainly not make it worse. So that's our topic that I throw out to the two smartest people I know, the two people who have the most experience in this space. Oh yeah, that's you and Jeremy. So, you know, even though Jeremy's an evil doctor.
Or Jeremy twice. The Let me ask you both, though. All right, if you had to pick a side, is coaching, the state of coaching in 2026, is it better or worse than it was in 2006?
Well, I can probably best answer that from a coaching perspective. So I coached for a very long time. I actually started coaching when I was a young teenager and continued coaching on till about 6 years ago. And so I would err on the side of it's actually better now as a coach. And the reason is because a lot of those opportunities where you could potentially start blurring the lines and start doing things that you shouldn't be doing as a coach. Those opportunities are less and less now, because of, social media, but because everyone has a camera, because everyone can communicate at lightning speed, as opposed to before, if you didn't hit a newspaper cycle, a lot of things were forgotten about and ignored. So I think that leads to more trust. I think that leads into coaches doing the right thing more often because they are afraid of the fallout as opposed to actually doing the right thing. And I think there's a lot to go on that because coaches, like assistant coaches, athletic directors, athletes, and support staff all have more of a say than they potentially did before.
Okay, so Jeremy's saying it's better because of the increased accountability.
Yes.
I'm going to agree with Jeremy, and I'm going to tell you why it might be worse. I think everything Jeremy said is exactly correct. What's frayed in this moment is the expectation of the athletes and the people around them. The expectation now, and we've seen it since NIL has become an issue. We've seen it in youth sports when scholarships are at issue, when excellence that are at issue, as is that the intensity of parent relationships and the weight of expectation on kids has grown dramatically in that period of time, probably exactly that period of time. The second piece of it, when you think about it, that's made it worse, is that we've added money to the equation, even if it's not directly an incentive. We've put it in the mix now in the high school ranks. We've put it in the mix in the college ranks. I'm not bragging on this because we got paid hourly, but we did the largest, our firm did the largest high school NIL deal in history. Now we work for the school, but we put a player in at a school with his family kind of uprooting to come there with a creation of a collective and about $800,000 of total value in the deal. That's a remarkable number. This is also a young man who, quadrupled that the next year and going to college, or maybe a bit more than that. So there is money and incentives here that are beyond our expectations. And I think the other problem is we don't know where they really belong because they're showing up inconsistently. Now, to Jeremy's point, where he's exactly right, we've gotten rid of a lot of the bad actors. There is a mechanism, at least, to get rid of bad actors, coaches who coach for power. Coaches who coach to be abusive, coaches who coached as predators. There's a mechanism now in our sports structure to get rid of them. But at least in terms of how we've complicated the message, how we've placed coaches at risk, it's a lot. It's pretty treacherous in some way. And I'm always reminded of this joke that Bear Bryant, the legendary Alabama football coach, Shug Jordan, a legendary Auburn football coach, were in a boat with a young coach and. They realize they've left the beer back on the dock, and Bryant gets out of the boat, walks across the face of the water, and brings back the beer. In the next moment, they realize they've left the bait back on the dock, and the Jordan gets up, walks across the face of the water, and returns to the boat. And the young coach, motivated, says, "I have to try that," and he falls smack dab in the water. And Jordan says, "Don't you want Bryant to tell you where the rocks are?" And so, to some degree, our goal in this conversation is to sort of share where the rocks are and how not to make it worse and how not to get wet and fall in the water like that young coach. And that's the advice you give, Jeff. That's exactly what you do with your clients. You've advised people on everything from deaths in amusement parks to diseases in a region to I was about to say the Challenger disaster, but you're much too young for that. But
I remember the Challenger
I
explosion,
was gonna
but
say I was
I
gonna
was 12.
I was gonna say the I was gonna say the BP oil rig issue and other things. You've dealt with clients and their expectations. So you're an expert in messaging, and you know what the drill is. It's don't always proclaim your innocence at the beginning. Try to find out and don't fight everything. Don't be the zebra in the net. Try to figure out how to act and how to act with compassion. I'd like to tee you up on that, Jeff. What what's corporate advice?
So if we're running around and throwing analogies and stories out there, I will show off my age. You remember Ruben Sierra, the Texas Rangers baseball, went to the Yankees, I believe, at one point, was playing for Joe Torre, legendary manager, did not do well, ended up getting traded away in disgrace. And when they asked him about his relationship with Joe Torre, Sierra's response was, "Oh, he only cares about winning." As if that was a damning thing. And he was absolutely ridiculed for making such a ludicrous statement because that's exactly Joe Torre's job. Now, the difference is Joe Torre is professional. He's in professional sports. He's dealing with people who don't get paid to have feelings. He's getting paid to produce results. Shy of doing anything illegal or against the rules, and even sometimes against the rules is just fine. That's his role. That's not the role that coaches and the vast majority of coaches today have, and certainly not anymore. And it gets even more complicated because Bob is exactly right. We're dealing with huge amounts of cash, money. If this wasn't professional sports before, it's awfully close. And so it gets tricky. The first thing I work when I work with when I work with at the NCAA level, when I work with amateur sports and the national sports organizations, is I say, you got to remember, your job is not to win. Your job is to produce winning athletes. And winning means different things for different people in different organizations. As much as that feels like a kick in the stomach sometimes, it's true. But you know what, we're the days of win at all costs, especially at amateur sports, are long, long gone. They just don't exist. The second one, and I'm sure you could expand on this in length, because frankly, you're the former athletic integrity guru for Penn State University in the wake of the largest scandal in NCAA history. The second rule I tell them is when you're presented with a shovel, stop digging. You know that it's you're absolutely right. And the tendency is to get defensive. The tendency is to deny, to extrapolate your innocence. I'm a big believer in communicating honestly, communicating openly, telling them, what's happening and what's going on. You have to do that without a shred or a hint of defensiveness.
Is it defensiveness or pride? What's the thing that stops us in this way?
Yeah, well, and one is that's like saying, is it red or is it scarlet?
Now, Bob, let me ask you a question. So, say you have a coach that is under investigation and being fired. One situation is where the coach didn't necessarily do anything nefarious or anything incorrectly. Maybe there's just some bad allegations out there. Then you have a coach who basically did everything, that they're being accused of. And then the third scenario is, what if the at a college or university, the athletic director, or on a pro sports organization, the GM or the owner wants to fire the head coach because they are under fire and they want to provide a scapegoat and fire someone else. Could you kind of give like a little bit of information about each of those three and why not responding defensively or with pride in any of those scenarios is a good idea?
Yeah, well, I think the siren that just went by my window is a good segue to that question, right? The idea that we're coming to it. Let's take them in reverse order. Owners, boosters, people in charge of athletics fire far too often, and they do it for almost now the thrill of firing. Oh, I have to fire that person, and I don't really care if they were really good or I went through the process. They didn't do something for long enough that I wanted done, and I wanted the joy of firing them. That is where leaders probably should come in and try to explain that that becomes wildly costly and kind of dumb. But that's almost been ingrained in our business model, right? That we're going to fire coaches too often. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers moved on from Mike Tomlin this year, although they didn't fire him. They made a parting. And you know, the part of the Steelers' success was their stability, their ability to have a great coach who far outperformed the median coach with resources and without it. I think it's going to be hard for them to replicate that. And I think
contrast that to Woody Hayes.
On the flip side of that, then that's the second scenario, right? The people that really did it, right? They did it, and they did it on national television. Well, you know, if you're representing them, it's kind of the lawyer's conundrum. You do represent guilty people. It's what we do. On the other hand, we try not to do the don't believe your lying eyes, because that doesn't help you recover. Most times that you can improve your behavior. You can ask for forgiveness and you can come back. So one, on the third question you asked, we fire too often and we do it inappropriately. That creates the problem. In the second case, sometimes there are people that are really guilty and some deserve firing and some deserve to be banned forever. But if it's something less than that, we want to make sure that it doesn't become a cancellation or an end for them. That's part of my job, to walk them through that and to allow them to have another day in a lot of cases. We want that outcome. And then the first scenario, when you're under question, when you're in the dock, if you will, when the heat is on you, there are some really good things that you can do to voice the right things, to say the right things, to not make things worse. And sometimes you have your lawyer say the wrong things, say the threatening things, say the coercive things. I've worked with that with clients. I tell them, look, let me say that. Don't you say that. You're the best employee in the world. You can say that. I'll make the larger argument. The short answer in our mind is that we have to be prepared for these situations. And almost like using a yoga term or something from Eastern meditation, not to judge them. Try to disconnect and to manage the situation breath by breath, step by step. And usually you can extricate yourself. You can't always extricate yourself with your job. You can't always extricate yourself with your reputation intact without taking a hit. But in almost every case, there's another day to be had, and that's what you're playing for. You got to kind of do that analysis. What are you playing for in the moment? And just like Jeff, I know if you're a CEO in this pressure, you're playing for the moment of one, can my CEO position survive? Second, can my company survive the blow? And third, how do we manage out of this? And leaders think in those three dimensional terms, I think, to that question, which is why it's such a great question, Jeremy.
It's counterintuitive. And it flies in the face of everything you want to do. If someone comes to you and says, you know, hey, you know, you beat up on your players, or, you know, you were taking gambling money, or whatever the allegation is, I don't care.
I needed the money to bet. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was assaulting them, but I love them.
Yeah.
I was tough love.
The tendency is to deny. I mean, that's human yep. nature, right? First off, you can never deny a negative with a negative. It just makes it more memorable. The most famous political quote on earth is, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Right. No one hears the word didn't. Right. but the advice I typically give is lean into it. If someone is coming to you and you know, you get a phone call from the local media outlet saying, hey, we're investigating that you may have taken gambling money or something, the proper response is bring it on. Absolutely. I stand by my conduct. I welcome an investigation. I look forward to proving
my life is an open book, and I want a full, fair and fast.
In the meantime, we're going to go ahead and kick butt tonight.
Yep.
We are focused on winning on the court.
We've talked about this, Jeff, and there are two things that you just say that I have to like emphasize and bold and kind of highlight to it. You know, I grew up in an area where we took driver's ed and they told you to steer into a skid. And yeah, that was exactly the phrase I've used in a variety of circumstances. Now, you're going to laugh at me because I used it around Urban Meyer when he was at Ohio State. and he was under investigation for not reporting a Title IX incident. And his reputation, if Urban had ever believed into steering into the skid, embracing both the problem and the solution, his life since would have been pretty would have been smoother. Now, on the flip side of that, he's won a couple national championships and coached a pro team, but he got fired from
I was
that.
going to say, how'd that pro team gig work?
It didn't go well. It didn't go well. We all get promoted above our level sometimes. But the flip side of that is, if Urban had been able to steer into the skid and say, "Look, I care about this. I've educated myself to this. I can solve this problem. I'm the right person to solve this problem because I've educated myself to it, know what I did wrong, know what my mistake was." That would have been a really good answer. And unfortunately, if you maintain the position of denial, you don't have any ability to embrace the solution set, right? So that's an important one for you. So I think much like a crisis, or much like the snow or a skid, steer into it to get out of it. Embrace it, and embrace the chance to prove your truth. It also gives you a chance to put the truth in your most favorable light. So I think that's an important piece. I think the other place is that denial, again, as you say, is if there is an element of truth, it makes you look worse as a result of this. And so that's a really important piece of the puzzle.
Well,
You
and
do,
there
you're brilliant
there are
at this.
times, it's not at all uncommon, where the allegation is, because the head coach is a public figure, they have an increased level of accountability, an increased level of public scrutiny, and they get, arrested for something, failing to stop at the scene of an accident, or something, speeding tickets. Like there are times when you kind of just have to lean into it and go, yeah, made a mistake. Obviously, I can't be doing that. That's not the kind of example I want to lead. I gotta take my lumps on that. I gotta pay the fine and I gotta move on. And at the end of the day, the public is going to go, you shouldn't have done that, and moving on.
Yeah, well, the
Do you
public
think that if Urban
won't
Meyer
get
did that? Sorry, go
in.
ahead, Bob.
Urban never did that, right? He never gave
Yeah,
control
that's yeah.
No, that's what I was saying. Would he still be coaching pro sports if he actually steered into the skid?
Maybe that team
Yeah.
looked pretty good this year, finally, after a couple of years in a coaching change. I don't
See,
know
I'd
if
argue
you.
that Urban Meyer's problem was that he kept making skids.
Yeah, well, that's
No,
another problem.
of course. But if he would have actually did some self-reflection and been like, how can I, better lead this organization? How can I do it instead of it's my way or the highway? How do I adjust to the group that I am coaching? And that's part of being a coach is adjusting your strategy. And I don't think he ever did that. It was always, he knew the best and it was his way. And I don't think he ever drove into the skid because he was like, I don't care that I'm skidding around or sliding or anything
Well,
else.
let's take Urban out of that, Jeremy. Let's ask the question of how many people never notice they're skidding and then keep skidding and turning the wheel into it. So,
Exactly.
yeah,
Oh, you know what we call those people? The owner of the New York Jets.
oh yeah, oh God, I'm as a Jet fan, I totally understand that. And I just usually follow that with just sell the team. To that one, but I think you're exactly right. I was going to pick another weird incident. Probably at the end of Masters week, and when this video gets seen, and an episode will be heading toward the PGA tournament soon after that. We're into golf season. I was outside the beautiful, beautiful spring day. Golf has begun in its full-fledged splendor, and I mostly hate it. It's a silly game, and but people care about it, and it takes on a lot of bad, maybe in addition to being enjoyable to play, it takes on a lot of bad kind of tropes that go with it. But last year, Scottie Scheffler, who was at the time the best golfer in the world, got himself into some trouble with a police officer, maybe an overzealous police officer, and got himself arrested, handcuffed, and put in jail for trying to drive around a police barricade at a tournament. It was, in the end of the day, not a lot of harm in the in, as it went. And I think maybe the police officer was a bit overzealous. Imagine that. But the short answer was it was a challenge for Scheffler, and he had an ability to steer into it. He didn't exactly in the moment. He probably could have done a bit more, but it became a one-day story. How do you turn something from being a 1, 2, or 3 day story in making it news forever? That's for you, Jeff, because that's your job.
I remember this. I remember. I mean, there are two factors at play. The big one that we can't even don't have time to even get into is that Scottie Scheffler had to make a withdrawal from the credibility bank, but he had a huge surplus in the credibility bank to start with. Everyone liked Scottie Scheffler. He's one of the nicer guys on tour. He was squeaky clean. He was a good guy. He was a good golfer. Compare that to Tyreek Hill gets arrested outside a Miami Dolphins game, right? There were, probably similar circumstances. Overzealous local police officer, very different narrative. Because Tyreek Hill is not a good person, and so automatically they're starting it from a different starting point. Scotty's response was, if you recall. It was an elegant blend of this is what I did, this is why I did it. I would probably do it again. I feel bad that that was misconstrued. I don't want to do anything bad. This is where I was going at the time. Like it was a plausible explanation. He kind of thread the needle between screw you all and apologizing without being apologetic.
But not a blanket denial, an explanation.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was on video.
You've articulated two things that I think are worth kind of noting again in the same way. In addition to steering into the investigation, to the inquiry, we probably have to treat it with some equanimity, but we also, I think, in the same moment, have to make allowances that other people would see it differently. That was Scheffler. He was able to explain what he did and allow other people to see it differently. And I think you did one more thing, and you said it is, look, there is some acknowledgement of who you are, and maybe you need to make sure you're living your life in the moments you're not in the vice, if you will, so that you have a credibility bank. Everybody has to kind of understand that when you're in a leadership role, that really your first job is maybe to build a credibility bank.
On that note, right? Concluding thoughts, Jeremy, credibility bank, do you have any? Right.
Well, so I have plenty of thoughts about a credibility bank, but speaking of a credibility bank, what if there is a leader that's under investigation and they're obviously not steering into the skid and they want to sit there and blame like potential victims or the actual victims of what it is that they're being accused of? Do you have any recommendations of not necessarily for those individuals, obviously, because we don't want to give them the cheat code of how to get out of something, but there's a lot of victim blaming, and the reason that that came to mind was when we spoke about Monica Lewinsky earlier. There was a very huge power dynamic that was involved, and I'm pretty sure that if she didn't comply with what was being asked of her, she probably would have been let go real quick. And there's a lot of other things that were at play there. So if there is victim blaming by a coach, where does that leave the credibility bank?
Well, I'll tell you where it leaves the coach, which is unemployed. It's just never going to work. Bob, we'll wrap things up with your thoughts on the issue. Stop digging holes, steer into
Yeah,
the skid.
when they hand you the shovel, don't dig any deeper. And when you
Yeah.
know you're in a hole, stop. I want to bring up our last segment today, and I think this may be a feature. And I'm stealing it from the best of sources. I'm stealing it from 1980s and 1990s TV show Saved by the Bell. Saved by the Bell, which gave us Zach Morris and Elizabeth Berkley and Tiffany Thiessen and Mario Lopez, most of whom have made some regrettable choices in their own lives as an adult too. But you know, they showed us teen life. I'm a little older than they are in real life. You're probably about right on their age, and Jeremy, you probably watched them growing up in Cali, so where they were set. So we probably have a slightly different perspective. But they did an episode on that show that I thought is one we should replicate and do each week. What they should have said, theater. And leaders under fire probably should always, after they get done making the ridiculous first statement, probably should have a what they should have said theater version. So each week, as we do these shows, or in each episode we do these shows, we'll take some suggestions for what they should have said theater. But you know, I think today the one question is, we were thinking about talking about the head of the IOC, Christie Coventry, the fairly new head of the IOC, who just went through her first Olympic cycle. And one of the things that she did, a topic that Jeff and I are decidedly on different sides of, but for slightly different reasons, Coventry managed to get on the wrong side of both of us in that moment. And Jeff, you had some thoughts on just Christie Coventry and her ability to communicate.
Yep, and I look forward to getting into that in detail. Those are one of those subjects that's probably better if we don't come with any notes. We just crack open, a six pack beforehand and sit there and go, all right, listen, this is what you should have done,
It
right?
isn't that the show anyway? I mean, that's what we're doing. This
Armchair quarterbacking on Monday. Here we go. I love it.
pod is what I should have said. Now, you know, each week we could come up with a different idea, but I mean, yeah, Christie Coventry is, and her stand on trans athletes managed to offend Jeff, who is opposed to the idea. It managed to offend me, who is somewhat in favor of the idea with certain controls. And if Jeremy was in earshot and had any opinion, it would have offended him too. So our first what they should have said episode is Christie Coventry, and maybe you should have kept your mouth shut entirely on this one. But we're in an interesting world. There are so many nominees for this as we go each week. Melania Trump. I do not know that Epstein, despite the video evidence. I have never heard of that man, Miss Lewinsky. The problem is, our public life gives us so many ideas to talk about in this area. But I'd like to come back to this in our future episodes and the future version of the pod, is to what they should have said theater. And that should be kind of our hallmark, because our goal when we review these questions and we try to give leaders some way to succeed, we need to tell them what they should have said. I'm gonna say goodbye on this episode on behalf of Jeremy and Jeff. I have to go run and tell a coach what she should have said in her interview, and now work on a statement. So here I go to go do that. So off to the wars again. If you've listened to us and enjoy us, please let us know. Hit us up on social media. Get to know us and find our podcast everywhere. Everywhere you find a podcast. Leaders Under Fire in Sports with our friends at Culture in Sports. It's Bob, Jeff, and Jeremy for today.
You've been listening to Leaders Under Fire in Sports by Culture in Sports. These moments under pressure don't just shape headlines, they shape people. They shape organizations and the cultures they leave behind. Thanks for joining me. I'm Jeff Chatterton, joined with Bob Boland and Dr. Jeremy Piasecki, and our special guests as we've examined what leadership looks like when it truly matters. If this conversation challenged the way you think about leadership in sports, we invite you to continue to learn with us at cultureinsports.com. Because influencing positive change starts with how leaders respond when they're under fire.